listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life Program for Wednesday, September 13th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. Really glad to be here, and I'm super excited to talk to Dr. Zach.
As am I. I'm really looking forward to our discussion tonight. I've got to get some fresh blood into this mix and get some new ideas going. I tell you, people are probably sick of hearing you and I go back and forth, but nonetheless, I'm so glad to have you with me tonight and so glad to have everybody in chat. And always thank you to those that catch up with us in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. We'll begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, Dr. Vicki, like you said, very excited for tonight's topic. We're going to be, I think it's probably too simplistic just to say we're going to be talking about moon cycles, but very happy to be talking about this fascinating topic with Dr. Zach Frame.
Well, hello. It's really great to be here. Thank you guys for giving me a chance to jump on and geek out on some of the practical applications, I think, to astrology and the moon that affects all of us basically on, you know, a daily basis one way or another.
Well, we're so excited to have you, and I'm thankful for it.
But one of the things, Zach, that kind of inspired this is that I've been noticing a shift in energy during the full moon versus the new moon. And I know you and I got on chat, and we were on Messenger, and you had a lot to say about it. But, you know, especially in a hospital, you know, it's like, uh-oh, full moon, and then quiet, and everybody's looking around at each other. 2 or 3 days later, whoa. You know, everything breaks loose. And the new moon seems to have more energy. Can you explain that, or am I just observing something weird?
No, I think that when you are working with the public, like in a hospital situation, or I noticed it a lot in a public school situation when I was teaching high school, I noticed very much kind of what you're talking about. The energy of the kids was like so much more unpredictable, so much more like just bigger, fuller, more dramatic. Like everything that they did was like more. Kids were getting in more trouble on the full moon, like more behavioral kind of issues. You know, I think that when you are working with the public and kind of watching those moon phases, then it becomes really obvious, you know. So I definitely think it's a pattern that you notice, and especially if you're kind of working in those situations. I think with the new moon, what's happening astrologically, if I can back up just a little bit, there's angle, there's between the sun and the moon, and from the Earth's perspective, the sun in astrology will represent the outward expression of your soul in this incarnation. It represents your ego, your vitality, your life force, the things that light you up, the things that make you go. The moon will represent a more internal, more subjective expression of your soul, an internal expression of your soul. And so when we're at a new moon, the sun and the moon are in a perfect alignment. They're both at 0 degrees. They're lined up from the Earth's perspective. They're in the same place, which is why we can't see the moon, because the Earth is casting a shadow over the moon and we can't see it. But in terms of the alignment, they're at a 0 degree. They're what we call in astrology in a conjunction. And so those energies are almost married. They're almost like the internal expression and the outward expression are lined up perfectly. So there brings a lot of intensity with that energy. With the – go ahead.
I was just going to say
– go ahead, Michael.
Oh, as I'm just listening along, I'm thinking, you know, what, do you have an idea about where that energy derives from? Is it the gravitational changes, or do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, there's a lot of people, when it comes to astrology, there are a lot of folks that, you know, I say naysayers, they're like, how can something so far away have an impact on us? And, you know, we've talked about superposition, we've talked about quantum mechanics, all these other things that things can like affect each other, blah, blah, blah. With the moon is probably the most concrete that affect, you know, it controls the tides. You know, it can have an effect on our biorhythm. Like when we are, I guess I don't have like extra examples. Those are like the big ones. You know what I mean?
But is it magnetics?
I don't think there's as much. No, that's out of my field. I don't want to say it doesn't have anything to do with magnetics, because I guess it could, but the moon isn't, to my knowledge, very magnetic. Like Mercury, for example, like we're coming out of a Mercury retrograde. This is like the third week of a Mercury retrograde. What that means from the Earth perspective, it looks like it's moving backwards in the sky. It's not. Like Mercury keeps doing what it's doing, but because of the way everything kind of revolves during the Mercury retrograde period for about 3 weeks, it looks like Mercury's moving backwards through the sky. And during that period, Mercury is physically closer to the Earth than it is at any other time in that rotation. And because Mercury is a gigantic ball of iron, that is kind of like bringing a magnet a little closer to Earth. And you'll notice during those Mercury retrograde periods, there's typically a lot more technological malfunction. You know, your technology kind of goes wonky, or things are delayed. Like there's a lot of weird stuff that just kind of happens during a Mercury retrograde. So like that can have more of, I think, a magnetic effect. But the moon rules our emotions, you know, and because the moon is in astrology, because the moon rules the emotions, we're all emotional beings. Like that's one of the exciting parts of being human. It's kind of what separates us, from my understanding, from some of those higher dimensional beings, is like we're, as we evolve, we're bringing with us emotional capacity, you know. Like anyway, that's some of my alien conspiracy theory, you know. Like one of the reasons that we're kind of, I've gone way off the rails with this.
This is good stuff.
Ask me a question.
So what about the new moon? Like okay. When they say the difference between that full moon and the new moon.
So with the new moon, you've got the sun and the moon are in that exact conjunction. They're both like at 0 degrees. They're in the same space, in the same sign, like wherever that is in astrology. The full moon is the opposition. It is 180 degrees on the other side. So if like the sun is, like right now the sun's in Virgo, the full moon, it's likely to be in Pisces, you know, because that is the opposite sign from that. And when the moon is on the opposite side of the sun, the earth is completely out of the way. So we're not casting any shadow on the moon whatsoever. And at that 180 degrees, we get a full picture of the moon, fully lit up. And that, in astrology, that aspect is called an opposition. And oppositions are oftentimes kind of challenging too, but what it really is it's a fruition. It is the fullness of the completing, not the completeness of the whole cycle, but like we talk about planting seeds at the new moon. We talk about like setting our intentions at the new moon phase. And if you think of it as like planting a flower at the new moon phase, the full moon is when the plant is blooming. That is when you have these ideas, these intentions, these things that you've planted at the new moon phase are blooming and getting ready to seed for the full moon. So like the first half of the lunar cycle is the waxing phase where the moon is getting bigger and you're working toward developing and nurturing those goals that we've initially kind of put into place. And then after the flower blooms, what does it do? It dies. So the waning cycle is where, you know, you have the lessons and the seeds of the things that you learned from your initial, you know, the initial, say you're like setting the intention with the goal of improving your relationships. And you spend the first half of the cycle, you know, doing things to, you know, network or talk to people, or maybe you're calling people, you know, just to say hello more than you normally would, just because you're trying to work with that intention. And then the full moon happens and you've got a new boyfriend, you got a new girlfriend, you found a significant, well, whatever your intention is, you know what I'm trying to say? And then you've got the lessons that you kind of learned working up to the full moon. And now the waning cycle, where it's kind of like winding back down, it's more of a passive energy. It's more of a synthesizing. It's more spiritual. Whereas the first half is more physical and more active, the second half of the cycle is more spiritual and more reflective.
You know, it's interesting when you use the analogy of a flower and the new moon. I've been an avid gardener for most of my life, not at the moment, but I would always plant underground plants or vegetables at the full moon. They grow faster. It's true.
Oh, sure.
And
okay.
I would, especially that one or two days leading up, I would, anything that, you know, potatoes, carrots, turnips, anything that, you know, grows underground. The above ground can be closer to the new moon. So anything that would be, you know, peas or, you know, other beans and things that I would, you know, not worry about the full moon, because they would naturally just grow. Mm. But it's interesting you drew that analogy. I just had to share that. Hmm. One of the things that old cowboys, and I knew this for all these years, my grandfather used to run a community pasture when he was, you know, again, many years ago, 50 years ago. They would never castrate during a full moon. It would always be during a new moon, because there would be less bleeding.
Okay.
So that lower energy, and it made a huge difference. When do you herd the cattle? When do you herd sheep? When do you do this? Full moon, they're all going to act weird, you know? Right. But especially, my grandfather was also an old country vet, and he would refuse to do certain surgeries and stuff during that full moon cycle. And it was just the old-timer way. And, you know, it's if we can try to plan anything that we're having going on surgically, not during a full moon. It's just not to say you can't. I'm just saying it's better if you don't. And so it's just a thing. But have you noticed a shift this year, Zach?
A shift like in... I can't see past this Mercury retrograde because, like, in my astrology, like, it's my Virgo rules my eighth house of, like, death and, like, transformation and traumatic healing and all of those things. And so, like, Mercury's in Virgo right now and it's moving backwards through my eighth house. So, like, I'm having all of this work done on me on, like, a deeper psychological level, like revolving around like death and birth, all this existential crises. So like I've just kind of been feeling like I'm gonna die for like the last 3 weeks, like just, you know, just trying to like hold on to the earth and hope it doesn't like spin me off of it kind of thing, you know. In terms of just kind of like general moon energy, it's, you know, I can't say I've noticed a ton with it.
So you notice more about what planets are also active at that time more than you do the moon cycle.
What I notice most about the moon are the first and last quarter, which is interesting because, like, you know, we the full moon and the new moon get all the credit, but that's like, you know, the conjunction and the opposition respectively with the new and full moons. But the first and last quarter make a 90 degree square. The sun and the moon are making this 90 degree right angle square. That's why you see exactly half of the moon on those first and last quarters. In astrology, the square symbolizes conflict. It symbolizes a challenge. It symbolizes, you know, argument, strife. We learn the most through a square, but it's very uncomfortable. You know what I mean? And I notice that on the first and last quarter, I am much more likely to get triggered by somebody else's stuff. You know what I mean? I'm more likely, and the reason I think is because, you know, if the sun is your outward expression and the moon is like your inward expression, you know, it's like there's going to be this conflict with the inner and the outward, you know. And so I have a couple of friends where we'll be having a conversation and things are fine. Then all of a sudden, I feel like I'm arguing. I feel like I'm defending something, or I'm like, hold on a second. And then I look down and I'm like, oh, it's the first quarter. I'm just going to let this one slide because I'm just going to pretend like it's not a thing. Or I'm not going to argue the point. I dip into the preference, principle, yield kind of thing. You know, the late Dr. Kelly's, you know, if it's a matter of policy or principle, stand firm. If it's a matter of preference, just yield. It really doesn't matter if it's red or green, let it go. And that's usually what I'll do. I'll look down, it's first quarter. Okay, this is, I'm not going to engage. I'm not catching the ball today, you know. And so that's usually what I notice the most.
And that's very powerful. And identifying, you know, what the motivations are and things like that. You know, I have been really enjoying this discussion. It occurs to me, I haven't joined in this for a minute, but I just love hearing this because it's a little bit out of my element. But one thing I'm curious about, we talk about these shifts on the individual level, kind of on the micro. Is there anything that's on the macro in terms of, you know, not necessarily just from phase to phase, but perhaps like supermoon to supermoon or things that kind of go in a larger, longer stretch in these kind of phases and patterns?
There are some things. Okay, so like, I mean, if you want to like go beyond like the just the lunar cycles, like the Saturn is like a big one, and it takes Saturn like 28 years to make one complete cycle around the sun. And you hear people talk about like the 7-year itch, you know, people who have been in relationships for a while and after about 7 years, they start getting a little antsy. Like that's Saturn, because like everything, like every date, like a marriage or a relationship, like you can cast a birth chart for that time, you know, it kind of like starts something. And every 7 years, Saturn is making one of those challenging positions, just like the moon, how the moon goes through the first quarter, the opposition, you know, full moon, last quarter, the moon. The planets do that too, in very much the same way. And like Saturn, the Saturn conjunction is your first Saturn return around age 28. And there's usually really big changes that happen in a person's life around age 28. Maybe they're getting married. Maybe they're having their first child. Maybe they're moving. Maybe they're buying their first house, you know, but usually around that age, there's some sort of big foundational shift that happens around that age. And again, around 58, or it's like 58, 59, you'll have your second Saturn return. And those are like the markers, like in astrology, the markers for like, you know, childhood, adulthood, and the wise age. And I don't like to say old age, but you know, it's kind of like the last hurrah or what have you.
It's okay. Dr. Vicky doesn't mind.
and so that's you'll definitely notice that in the mundane astrology, like in terms of like how it can affect the collective, there are a lot. That's the field is called mundane astrology, and it's kind of looking at how the transiting planets, the overall astrology, affects us as a collective. I don't have a lot of information on that. There are things that just kind of stress me out, you know, like being the last two times that Uranus has transited Gemini, there have been wars in America, and we're like coming up on that. And then you look at the political climate, you look at everything else, it's like, let's just hope, because it is Uranus, and Uranus rules technology and everything else, let's hope that we don't have, you know, like the worst case scenario, we just kind of get the cyber thing going on. I don't know.
When is that?
The next, I think between 2024 and 2027, I think is when Uranus like will move into Gemini, if it hasn't already. But like it takes Uranus 84 years to do one complete trip around the sun. And so like every 84 years, when Uranus comes back around, Uranus shakes things up. In the astrology, Uranus is the planet, like the great awakener. He is unconventional. He is unpredictable. He's unstable, like all of those things. So when he comes back around, he's like, okay, well, we're going to shake up the status quo because this isn't fun anymore.
So, you know, I know you're not prepared for this question, but what about the big eclipse on April 8th, 2024?
Ooh, that's a really great one. Of course I'm prepared for that one. Not
really. Oh, yes. Go.
I'm going to make a trip. Alex and I are going to like get into the line of totality to like go see that, because it's going to – some people are arguing that – okay, back up. Eclipses bring fated karmic change, like major upheavals, and – we actually have eclipses occur in seasons. So in October, we actually have another eclipse season. There's a lunar, a solar, like whenever you have a solar eclipse, 2 weeks later on the full moon, you'll have the lunar eclipse. Solar eclipses only happen at the new moon, and lunar eclipses only happen on a full moon. But depending on where the North Node is, which has to do with like the closeness to the Earth and blah, blah, blah. It's like sciencey math stuff that I don't fully get. I can read it on a chart, but I can't tell you how they figure it out. But like when we have those eclipses, depending on where they are and what areas are like in the astrology are being affected, depends on how it can impact you. That particular April 8th eclipse is literally cutting the country in half. It starts in Texas and then rolls all the way up through, it starts in Mexico, but it cuts all the way through Texas, all the way up through Ohio, out Canada. And it literally divides the country. So some mundane astrologers, when I say the country, I'm talking about the U.S. in case listeners don't know I'm from the U.S. So mundane astrologers are kind of like making some assertions that the country could very much be divided in, which we already are, but it could be very much divided in a really karmic shaking up upheaval kind of way in terms of the symbology of that particular eclipse.
Well, I got to tell you, I was told about this by a medicine man and et cetera. It's a bit of a story. But back in 1996, and the old man called it the day of the new sun. Well, I found out not too long ago that NASA has been calling it the day of the new sun. I was also told in 1996 it would be 2024.
No way.
And so I, you know, I'm still here living long enough to see it. So again, 1996 is a long time ago. And, you know, it was still on the precipice of the internet and we didn't know stuff, but it was in a ceremony and a number of things that happened. And they said the day of the new sun, 2024. And so when I saw that NASA was doing this countdown to April 8th, 2024, I went, boy, you know, like, I mean, all the bells and whistles went off in my brain. And I went, so when you're talking division, what the old people had told me is it's a day of new birth. So it's the same thing. If you have dissension, that brings new life. You know, you have things fall apart, it means the new beginnings. And so I don't know how that unfolds. I can't speculate to what that means. But, you know, you're obviously, you know, in the astrology world, it means a big shift.
That's typically the or big changes. You know, energetic, karmic change and upheaval is ultimately what an eclipse will do. Back in the day, like when I say back in the day, I'm talking like old school kings and queens, medieval times, they would look at these eclipses to predict things like the death of the king. Oh. Like they would use, like it was the type of celestial omen that meant something was going to happen, probably not good, but something.
You know, that's very interesting. And you know me, I always dig history. What about comets and things like that? Does that tie into this at all?
Into astrology? Yes. Like there, it depends on like which, you know, what purposes the astrologer might use it for. A real big one is Chiron. Chiron is pretty commonplace to be used and studied. Chiron is like the centaur, the wounded healer who was in the mythology. He was wounded with a wound that was supposed to be fatal, but he couldn't die from. And so it was, you know, I don't know the full story. I know he like basically like ended up healing other people through his inability to cure himself. So that's why they call him the wounded healer. There's more to the story. But in the astrology, Chiron represents an area of your life where you were made to feel shame, or you were made to feel awkward, or like something about yourself that you're not proud of. And so it's usually an area of trauma, childhood trauma. I usually see it as childhood trauma. But there is, because we all have it, and it's where is that wound? And Chiron kind of shows us where and what kind of wound we have that we need to work through. And as we, if we learn to work through it and accept the challenge, you know, that type of wound is what gives us an opportunity to serve as a beacon for other people struggling with the same thing. You know what I mean?
Mm. So when we think about, just to rewind here a minute, the full moons, new moons, and what I might have been observing in these last few months could also, or more importantly, be planetary shifts and things going on in the cosmos. Hmm. Could it also, I'm going to hit you with this one, Zach, with all the satellites and, of course, space debris, does that affect the energy and influence how these planetary, you know, vibes are going on?
That is a multifaceted question. I think that with the first part of your question, like, you know, the moon associations versus the planetary associations, I would say yes. The thing is about the moon is the moon moves really fast. The moon is the fastest moving body in the sky from Earth's perspective, and it switches signs every 2.5 days. So you'll be in Capricorn for 2.5 days, then you're going to be in Aquarius 2.5 days, then you're going to be in Pisces for 2.5 days. And each one of those signs will determine the manner in which we express those emotions, because the moon rules our emotions. And each of those signs has a different, we'll just say, attitude, like a different quality, you know? Like Capricorn is not very emotional. Like Capricorn is the moon, or back up, the moon is home in Cancer, That's where the moon likes to be. And Capricorn's the opposite of that. And when you put a planet in the opposite of where it wants to be, it's the opposite of where it wants to be. It doesn't do very well. You know, the moon wants to be in Cancer. Cancer is mothering. Cancer is emotional. It is sensitive. It is passive and feminine. Like Capricorn is dry and cold. And Capricorn, like, they like hard work, but emotions don't get you success in, like, a work situation. Emotions usually just kind of hold you back and get you in trouble. So Capricorn, it's the moon's at its detriment there. So when the moon is in Capricorn, you might actually find yourself emotionally stifled. Mm. Whereas Aquarius, you know, Aquarius is unconventional. It is, you know, going to go off the beaten path. It wants to shake things up. It has a lot in common with Uranus, which is why Uranus is the modern ruler. And so when the moon is in Aquarius, you might just be like, you know what? F it all. Blow it up. I don't actually care about these things. You know what I mean? By the time you get to Pisces, Pisces feels everything so deeply. Like Pisces wants to be the martyr. They want to just take care of everything. You might feel like, ugh, if I don't do this, nobody else is going to do it. That's going to be your Pisces moon.
But what's interesting to me, Zach, is in this year in particular, because I've always been for decades an avid observer of full and new moon cycles. Mm-hmm. This year seems to be different. And I can't put my finger on it. That's why we're having this talk.
Sure, yeah.
But something seems different. And I don't know. I continue to observe. But it seems it's not doing that pinnacle right at that moment. Do you know what I mean?
So maybe, and this could be a whole other thing, like taking it to the astrology, we have what are called perfection years. Each year of your life, you are kind of moving through this 12-year cycle. And like whatever your rising sign is, that kind of determines the structure of your perfection years. But 1 year out of your 12-year cycle, it's going to be ruled by the moon. So if you happen to be in your whatever perfection year that's ruled by the moon, it will stand out to you because.
But I'm not the only one observing this. Even the people at work observe it.
Oh, I see what you mean.
This is why if it was just me, I'd say, oh, there's something going on with me. But I have talked to all the coworkers. I've talked to the security. You know, I'll work, you know, later in the day. And I look at security, I said, it's a full moon. That's pretty quiet. And they go, yeah, that's weird. And it's been consistent for the last 4 or 5 months.
Could it be our own rising consciousness as a species and being more aware and more sensitive to those?
I don't know. Because maybe 2 or 3 days later is pandemonium. It's just some kind of shift. You know, well, whatever should happen on the full moon is happening 2 or 3 days later.
I see.
The shift you're talking about. Okay. That makes sense. I was thinking it from a different angle. I was thinking about kind of a shift in, you know, global consciousness, if you will, which kind of was the prompt for the earlier question about things more in the macro. But, you know, it's very interesting.
But I have to wonder with all the cucka in the air. You know, how is that affecting us? And, you know, even the iPhone 15, I think it's being banned in France. I could have the country wrong because it's giving off too much radiation above and beyond what they say is normal. So iPhone is taking it to task, blah, 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 you know, because all of our technology gives off a certain amount of radiation. Mm-hmm. And we've got satellites, we've got debris, we've got all kinds of things going on that, and of course the polar shift, and we've got vortex shift, and, you know, pick one.
And let's throw in the magnetic shift, the idea that the poles are going to reverse.
Exactly. And so I'm just wondering, does this influence a delayed reaction, you know, where we're kind of in a delay mode, kind of like slow motion? I don't know. Because it's consistent. And I'll talk to the people at work, you know, on a new moon, which is ordinarily kind of quiet, and everybody goes about their business saying, why are people in a mood? People are in a mood. So it's just an observation and wanting to know. I mean, I'm totally on board, Zach, with what you say about all the planets influencing whatever full or new moon's going on. But something seems to be different.
So maybe, and this might reflect what you're saying, but I thought it was just me. I haven't corroborated with other people, but I noticed that, like, my sleep about 3 days before the full moon is trash. But I learned that that was, like, potentially something kind of unrelated. And before the new moon, like 3 days before the new moon, my sleep is trash. And I don't know if that's, but again, I just thought that was me. That's something I've noticed with myself probably for the last few years. So I don't know if it's been like, you know, a real shift for me, or if maybe I just kind of became aware of it a little late to the party. You know what I mean?
Well, and this is where, you know, I have always been kind of conscious of checking in with myself and then asking other, like, readers. Like, back in around 2000 to 2005, I noticed that readings were changing. There was more alternative pathways, so to speak. So I called a couple other readers I knew. One was a palmist. She'd been doing it for like 50 years, you know, and then talking, have you noticed something different? And they say, yes. So I do try to take it outside myself to say, what are you observing? What are you experiencing? Mm-hmm. And I think that there's some kind of energetic shift, but it could very well be, you know, human created, because we are, you know, kind of polluted. and you know, there are so many things going on in, you know, in the world that it all has to play some kind of influence, I think. But what necessarily? So my curiosity was, is there something in the planets that's different collectively, or where are we? And you talk about Saturn, you know, and doing its dance.
And so there's a lot of retrograde action that's happening from now until 24. I don't know when it all started. I think it probably started around February. But, like, Saturn is currently retrograde. All of the outer planets, Pluto, Uranus, Saturn, Neptune.
How long ago did that happen before?
I think it happens like that every few years, maybe 3 years. Like, it just kind of gets to where all of the outer planets are, like, moving backwards for a span of probably 6 to 8 months, you know.
Is, like, there, like, a 100-year shift as well, Zach,
there, planets? Yes. Neptune takes 184 years to make one revolution, and the big one, the really big one, and this will kind of blow your mind when it comes to U.S. history, is every 248 years it takes, that's how long it takes Pluto to make one revolution. And if you go back and look through the history, and this is according to some mundane astrologers that I have, like, followed on YouTube and stuff, that because Pluto brings transformation, Pluto is like the sign of death and destruction. It is the phoenix that like rises out of the ashes. It is psychological trauma. It is fear. It is all of the nasty stuff that we never really want to deal with. But historically speaking, whenever Pluto makes his return, a civilization either falls or transforms.
And when is that going to happen?
We just had that. That was like the 2020 election.
Oof. That checks out.
Interesting.
You know, right. One thing I've been thinking about when we talk about these transitions, and I think we've touched on it already possibly, but the idea that change does not necessarily mean bad. I like that you said transition as opposed to, you know, something completely falling too, because it can be a good thing. We know that there are things that need to change, that there's something that's got to give, and I hope that this transition might be in a good direction, even though it might feel painful right now.
And that's, you know, the thing about any of those Pluto transformations. They all, it's got energy of like the Tower card. You know what I mean? Where the things that are kind of falling away are the things that are no longer serving us. Where we are the things that we lose are the things that need to go. You know, it is getting to the truth. It's like exposing things that are kept in secret. You know, a lot of things that have been kind of kept away from the public are becoming more public. You know what I mean?
Because, aliens.
The way that, well, you know, even beyond aliens, but definitely aliens. Go ahead, Vicky.
No, it's like the Rosicrucian Order, the ancient mystical order, the Rosicrucians, for instance. The history of that is it would only surface every 100 years to recruit more keepers of the secrets, you know, and the old doctrines. And so, I mean, I guess people would live 100 years or whatever it was, but it would only make that surface, and it would be that 100-year transition or within that relative time period. The other that I've observed is technology, industrialization, mm-hmm. usually happens mid-century. And if we go back to, you know, mid-1800s, mid-1900s, mid-1700s, 1600s, there's usually an industrialized shift, you know, within our humanity, if you will. And that's why I'm asking about this, you know, the bigger, wider, macro kind of cycle.
And can I just throw in real quick, you know, I love this. I love this discussion. I love this direction right here. And what I just thought about is, you know, you talked about the industrial changes, the kind of, you know, in the totally systemic changes of societies and how we do things and like that. But what about the fact that we've been accelerating that rate of change and how often we change over the last few centuries? Mm. You know, I've always heard and largely agree with the idea that the more knowledge you have, the quicker you accumulate new knowledge because everything's interconnected. The more you know about biology, that will affect robotics, and the more you know about this will affect that, et cetera, et cetera.
It is my understanding, and I think even my partner had mentioned a few things, like an article or something that he had read recently about technology, that we're on the cusp of another renaissance, of a technology renaissance, in such a way, like the way the Industrial Revolution changed our country and changed our culture and changed our way of life, technology is about to do the same. And it, in terms of jobs, in terms of employment, in terms of like how we use technology, like we're kind of sitting on that cusp. And so I think that because it is, Michael, I think it's exponential. You know what I mean? Like you, if you look at just in terms of the hardware, right? When I was growing up, like my computer ran on 32 megabytes of RAM.
Yeah. I remember those days.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But then when you upgraded, what did it go? 64 and then, you know, 128 and 256.
Excuse me, you guys. My technology at age 8 was rabbit ears on a television.
I thought you were going to say the abacus.
So, come on. We didn't even have a TV till I was just about 8 years old. So,
and then did you have to walk down a snow-filled hill to get to it?
Yes.
But it was exponential. Like, the way the data hardware, like, compounds, it would double every time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and now, when you get a standard computer, it's got at least 4 gigabytes of RAM at minimum, and a lot of them have 8 or 12.
And that's, 4 is low end these days. And, you know, just going back to what you were talking about, the rabbit ears, it's still exponential, like Dr. Zach is saying, because you went from telegraph to telephone, radio, then to TV so quickly in the, you know, grand scheme of things.
Well, some people could say reverse technology, you know, with alien spacecraft. But, you know, I know Tabitha's mentioning the Roswell crash. I am actually in the process of reading The Day After Roswell. It's fascinating stuff. But we have to go back further than that to Germany, because it's also said that Hitler had found an alien craft. And had he been able to launch this plane that he was building, he would have won. And it was just he was right on the precipice of getting it airborne.
I think that's
The Day After Roswell, by the way, guys, is good reading. But back to Zach, these shifts, when things are accelerating, does it affect planets, or planets affect the acceleration, or is it kind of hand in hand?
It's an interesting question, because if you buy the planets have any effect whatsoever, you know, then I would say that because the planets are fixed, you know what I'm saying? Like, they don't change their speed. The acceleration that we're feeling here is relative. You know what I mean? Like, the moon moves at the speed that it moves at. I think that when it feels faster, or I don't know, I would give Uranus some credit, because Uranus shakes things up. You know what I mean? But I don't really know how to answer that one. I think that I'm stumped. I don't know. I don't know why it feels that way, but we know that, you know, time is relative. We know that as we get older, time tends to move faster. I mean, when you're 5 years old, Christmas is so far away. And when you're 35 years old, screw this holiday. I'm over it. Like, you know what I mean? It
comes. Try being 68.
You know, but you're right about relativity. I mean, one thing that came to mind, you said that the speed of the moon and these things don't change. And relative to us, they don't, but they do. You know, there wasn't always a moon there. You know, the planets haven't always been in this spectrum. And I wonder how minute might the changes need to be for, you know, and this along this line of thinking for it to affect us.
There's so many rabbit holes we could go down just with that question. It's like, I don't know. Cause I know with like with tropical astrology, like the sun has been rising at this specific area during the winter solstice and the summer solstice for millennia, and without fail. So when you're like using the tropical zodiac, that is based on the seasons and the relative position of the sun and the tilt of the earth, et cetera. Like it's consistent. Sidereal astrology looks at things a little bit different, because there is a shift in the stars of 1 degree every 72 years. And so sidereal astrology is looking at a more literal kind of thing, you know, like where the constellations are. And so like the Aries constellation doesn't line up with the tropical zodiac of the first day of spring, which is why, you know, some people argue that tropical astrology is, I don't want to say it's like better, it's just more consistent, because there isn't that change. You know, the sun rises and sets the same way year after year on the same days. And so with Vedic astrology, sidereal astrology, they kind of account for that 1 degree shift every 72 or 74 years or whatever. And so you know, I imagine they experience something. I don't know. But like, if it's only 1 degree every 72 years, mm-hmm. you're only going to live long enough for 1 degree shift. You know what I mean?
So can I'm really compelled to want to ask you an off the topic question, Zach.
Okay, sure. I'm here for it. Let's play.
Okay. So when you're born, planets are all aligned in a certain place. That never changes, right?
Right.
Okay, that's day one. What if someone has a near-death experience brought back to life by technology, medicine and technology? Is that now a new day of birth?
Good question.
I think that's a great question. I would say no. But I would say that date is significant, and that documenting and putting that, like looking at a chart for that date, you could view that as another start. I guess you could. You could view that as another birth chart to like look as like a restart.
Well, you know, again, predicting death nowadays is a waste of effort, because you know, we can all be kept alive by medicines and technology and all kinds of stuff now that wasn't possible even 50 years ago. So that's a moot point. But every reader I met when I was young said I would not live past 40. And only one astrologer said to me, if you live past 40, it would be interesting to meet you and see who you are. And, of course, I had cancer. It's a long story. So I did live past 40. I know one other woman said I was a walk-in. You know, I said, no, it's just the evolution of my soul, you know, living past my expiry date, you know. I just passed my expiry date, that's all. But
I don't think so.
No, because medicine, you know, again, we have things that could keep me alive. And if I didn't take B12 injections every 6 or 7 days, I would die. And that's, I'm not embellishing. That's a fact. My central nervous system, I don't process through intrinsic factor, hydrochloric acid, enzymes, any kind of B12 nutrition. So I have to have really high doses of B12 in my body by injection. And no, you can't take pills because there's no enzymes to carry it into the bloodstream that goes to the nervous system. Mm-hmm. So if I don't take that, and again, my readings are off the chart, then I die. It's simple. Mm-hmm. Now, if there was no synthetic, like cyanocobalamin, or there's several of them, then I wouldn't be here. So my question then, I know I'm not alone in this, everybody. If you have a heart transplant, kidney transplant, if you have, you know, you're brought back to life by, you know, a big electric shock thing when you have a heart attack, any number of disorders or diseases where you're brought back to life in this embodiment, do you then, can you then look at the life from an entirely different perspective planetarily? Silence.
From my perspective, I would say that you can view that as an event. You could cast that as an event chart. Oh,
okay.
My opinion as an astrologer, your natal chart is cast from the moment you drew your first breath. And I think that if you've got astrologers that were able to just kind of look at it and be like, okay, yeah, well, if you live past 40, I mean, that those aren't the kinds of predictions that I would make. You know what I'm saying? But if they can see that, chances are there's something in the transiting planets that would show the struggle with the cancer, the treatment, and the success. Because a lot of the thing about astrology is your natal chart is what they call your natal potential. It takes transiting planets to trigger points in your natal chart to bring those things to life. And transiting planets can't activate anything that isn't already present in your chart.
Which is why that astrologer said, if you live past 40.
Right.
Meaning there was an event with a possibility.
You know, so I would say that you could, like, your, we'll just say, second lease on life could be an event chart, and you could look at that as a secondary, just a secondary way of looking at that. I wouldn't call it a, myself, I wouldn't call it a natal chart, but you call it like a natal 2.0. You know what I mean? Or like label it like your second chance or, but it's definitely notable to, for example, okay, so like, in my medical astrology class, one of the assignments that we had to do, we were, learning about, it wasn't even the medical astrology class. It was just one of the foundational courses. We were talking about looking at transiting planets, and the assignment was to pick an event that happened in your life and then go back and look at the transiting planets compared to your natal chart and see like what you can see. And we're kind of talking briefly about the nodes. The nodes represent karmic big change, like the eclipses, similar, it's like got eclipse energy. The nodes have like an eclipse energy, so it'll represent fated and karmic events. And I was like, well, my MS diagnosis was pretty big. Let me just go see what's going on there. Hmm. And I'm looking at that, and that was my nodal return. That was the north node coming full circle. And to the day I got my MS diagnosis, I'm like, well, that isn't freaking karmic. I don't know what is. You know what I mean?
And so, you know,
go ahead.
Yeah, I think we might have to go 2 hours tonight. We'll play it by ear because I want to play with this idea so much. I love it because I'm thinking about this too. You know, I think all three of us have had these things, maybe myself least of all. But, you know, I had pneumonia very badly as a boy that if I didn't live in the modern era, I would have died. It gave me asthma that I struggle with. If I didn't have albuterol and other steroids and it was a bad attack, I'd die. And it just, you wonder about those kind of things as opposed to, you know, you were talking about the B12 shots or any potential treatments for MS. Obviously, I'm on the lowest end of that. But, you know, and then also, is it just the physical? What about the soul? If the soul is almost reborn through a catalyst of experience and awareness.
That's funny. The expression of as above, so below, you know, and a lot of psychological issues, if they don't get addressed, they manifest physical. So it's really interesting kind of how those things play out, you know, when you kind of start looking at things, you know, about, yeah, I think that there is a psychological component. What's interesting to me is, like, because I've got, like, the traditional astrology background, but now I'm kind of working on fine-tuning my medical astrology lens. For example, like, the moon represents sensitivities, areas that we might be sensitive. And if you have an air moon, an Aquarius moon, a Libra moon, or a Gemini moon, the air signs typically do not respond well to medical medicines and treatments and stuff.
That's me. Or
is it?
Yeah.
Or it takes a lot less of a medication to do the same thing that it does for other people.
Oh, hello. Yeah. So I know I have an Aquarius moon, but a Gemini rising. So it explains a few things.
Right.
Duality. Jerry has mentioned something. She had to leave us, but we've all asked her, a couple of us have asked her in the chat what she meant. Do you know anything about, we have 5 exit points in life?
5 exit points.
I've never heard of that before, and I would,
Do you know the term exit point?
Jerry said, I would look at it as a new chart. Interesting to think about it being a new birth chart date. You have 5 exit points. Oh, she just said,
I was gonna say,
exit points are what our souls wrote into our plan for this lifetime that we could use to leave this lifetime if need be. I have used up 3 of those exit points, 2 with NDEs and 1 with my last surgery. They don't necessarily create karma. Huh. That's a whole new one to me. I find that fascinating.
I have not heard of that. When she said exit points, I was thinking, I don't know what I was thinking. In my brain, I was like thinking about DMT, the spirit molecule, and like how when our consciousness leaves the body, we have like a flood of DMT. Like, but I don't think that's, I don't know. I have no idea. It's out of my wheelhouse to.
Maybe we can learn more about that from Jerry in a future program.
Yeah absolutely. And thank you for clarifying that, Jerry.
Yeah, and she said she'll find some resources, but maybe Jerry, maybe you would like to come on the program sometime and have a talk with us.
I'd love that. And
I love it too. You
know, if she says no, we'll just find a way to blackmail her, just like we did with Tabitha, who's going to be coming on October 4th.
Oh, yay for Tabitha. You know, thanks, Zach. This hour just flew by. We didn't pick cards. We'll do it next week off the top of the show. How about that, Michael?
I think that's a good idea.
And just kind of a free-form kind of conversation next week. Thank you, Zach.
There is a new moon tomorrow. So remember to plant those seeds of intention for tomorrow, because there is a new moon tomorrow. Sorry, I'll let that praise continue. Go ahead, Dr. Vicky.
I just want to thank you so much. You're always such a joy.
Hey. I want to praise too, all right? Don't hog it all. No, honestly, I have loved this. It went by so fast. I found myself constantly just sitting back and listening and thinking and realizing, oh, wait, I'm supposed to be doing something, I think. But I love it. I also thought of this a little while back, but I feel like I do deserve a congratulations for hearing Uranus so many times without giggling like a child. So, you know,
Uranus, however you say, I've heard it all three ways, but you did great, Michael. Good job.
I appreciate that. I think that was really a lucky break for us all, but
I have seen so many memes on Facebook about that planet. I can't tell you.
All right, when are we going to get together and rename it?
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you so much. Always appreciate having you.
Thank you guys for having me. I hope you all have a really great night. And thanks for the viewers and the people in the chats.
Yay. Well, Michael, again, I've learned things tonight. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all did.
Things I hadn't thought about, that's stimulating other thoughts, you know, like, oh, where can I take that thought?
Absolutely.
And that's what we're here for every week. And, so I'm just grateful.
So am I, and I can't say it any better than you. It's that it's like that the match that strikes starts the fire. It's the beginning of the cascade of thought going from one to the other. Just get your mind thinking. I love it so much, and I enjoyed it so much. And thank you. I mean, I feel like I should say this has been a Spirit of Life with Dr. Vicky and Dr. Zach. I mean, I've just been a layman here, just enjoying and eating it all up, and just thank you. It's been a wonderful broadcast for me, and I think we've gotten a lot of praise in the chat as well. So thank you for that. And yeah, we'll pull some cards next week at the top of the show, and we're going to have Tabitha coming up. We're going to be picking a topic still, but we're going to be looking forward to having her with us on October the 4th.
Jerry just confirmed she'll be with us in November.
Oh, I didn't see that.
She's away in October. She'd love to do a presentation on exit points.
Awesome, awesome. So we'll plan on that in November sometime.
Yep.
And yeah, we have a lot of stuff to look forward to. So it has gone by so fast tonight, but it is that time of the evening. And as we wrap up, Dr. Vicky, any more amazing thoughts?
We'd be nothing without you, Michael.
Oh, honestly. Pshaw, I say.
You know, don't let them push you around out there, people, but, you know, have a little gratitude every day for what we do have, and, you know, for a lot of things going on in the world, we're okay. So, you know, and I have that moment every day of saying, I'm good.
Well said. And I can't wait to see y'all next week. We're going to have a great time. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.